Welcome to the Dope Black Woman podcast, the podcast where we share stories of Black excellence as part of our safe digital sisterhood. I'm Leanne Levos.
I'm Rashan, but you can call me Shan.
I'm Livs.
This week on the podcast, we're talking to intimacy coach Duchess Ippi. Welcome, hello. Duchess, to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Well, not being here, but, you know, speaking to us today.
No worries. Thank you for the invite.
I think we should start by just saying, you know, how are you and are you safe and well? Because right now is such a crazy time. You're obviously doing this from home. And are you okay? Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything's fine. We're good. Everything's fine. I mean, I just got a message from my daughter's school today. Her school's closed for 3 days because of this virus.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, so we're just kind of just hoping that the teachers get well and there's nothing worse that happens. But, you know, we're coping, we're surviving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good to hear. So, yeah, so as I said in the intro, you are intimacy coach, which is a word that I've struggled to say. I just realized. But anyway, but for people that aren't familiar, what does that even mean? What is your role?
So an intimacy coach is someone who helps people, or rather, I would say people and couples. So people who want to get into a relationship, people who are even single, or people that are in a relationship, it's helping them to deepen the connection that they have or to understand themselves more. So what happens that people sometimes disconnect from each other and then they think that there are other reasons why that's happening. But what it is that connection, the thing that brought them together in the first place, is missing. So my role as a coach is to help them to kind of rediscover and reconnect.
Mm-hmm. And a question that we always ask our guests right at the beginning is, what makes you — we are dope black women — but what makes you a dope black woman?
What makes me dope? Well, for starters, I'm called the Duchess, so I'm just awesome.
Hey, there we go.
Start with that. And another thing that makes me is that when I started my coaching practice business, it was focused towards the Black and ethnic minority community, because we don't have many people like me, even though we do suffer the same relationship issues that everyone else does. But I believe that what we have is unique. The issues that we face are unique to us, and only someone from the same background, culture, can truly understand and to actually help our community move forward. So I think that's what makes me a dope black woman.
Oh, that's amazing. So now, how much of your clientele is black couples? How much is mixed? Like, what's it kind of like?
Most of my clients are black. There are a few white, but they're mostly black. And the reason is that I've actually advertised myself stating that. My website states that where my focus is at. I won't say no to anyone. Because, you know, coaching is coaching, but I do feel that I have something that makes me unique and helps me to understand and bring out what is hidden in us in when it comes to relationships. Because the way we look at relationships, the way we were brought up, the culture, religion has kind of made us a bit more, I won't say colder, but we're a bit more reserved in the way we approach relationships and the way we approach love, affection, intimacy. And so, yeah, so most of my clients are from the black community.
What kind of problems do they normally come to you with? And do you find that black couples are more hesitant to engage in intimacy coaching for the same reason that you just mentioned?
Oh my goodness, yes. So to be honest, I would start. What had happened is that when I first started my coaching, I started off as a sex coach. Now, that was like a conversation stopper. So, you know, and...
Okay.
So, and the thing about it, I didn't have a problem with that because I realized that there is also that gap because we don't talk about sex. So I was happy to have that conversation. But what I realized that every time I had an individual come to me, because most times what happens is an individual comes first, that even though they're coming to complain about their sex life, what they were actually complaining about was what was happening before they had sex. And I normally had women, but even at that, so they'll come and say, oh, you know, my husband said something horrible to me and therefore I just don't get turned on anymore. Oh, my wife, you know, she doesn't understand my needs, or, you know, we just have so many arguments. I had a client who said something along the lines of, she had breast augmentation, but didn't like the scars. And that was a conversation we had. So it was about her loving herself. So even though when I have couples or people that are married, it's about, oh, what the other partner is doing, because you know how it is. We never say it's our fault. We always have to blame someone else. It's always about, you know, communication. They don't understand me. You know, they want something that I can't give. But then when it's an individual, it's them talking about the issues that they're having with themselves. So that was why I kind of moved away from sex coaching and focused on intimacy, because I realized that to get the sex right, you've got to get the intimacy right.
All right.
You know,
it comes beforehand.
So, yeah, exactly. So I just said, you know what? I can deal with the sex. That's not a problem. You know, I can talk about that for a long time. But at the same time, I still wanted to let people know that you've got to get your foundation right. So either you get it right before you go into a relationship, or get it right while you're in the relationship, service your relationship. And so, yeah, so those are kind of the common things that I get. Couples or those in the relationship come to me with different things than those who are single.
Mm. For me, like, it's interesting, you know, what even is intimacy? Like, what does it even look like? And how does it even manifest? Because that is so individual as well. Like, some people, it's like strictly a physical thing. Like, it's strictly about touch, mm-hmm. and, you know, like you said, sex and like cuddling, all kinds of things. And for other people, it's a, you know, it takes so much to even just be vulnerable with someone and yeah. open up those wounds, and that can bring intimacy. So, you know, what is your definition of intimacy?
So for me, I remember hearing somewhere, and I can't for the life of me remember where, I watch so many videos, but it was a definition that someone said, intimacy is into me you see. So that means that you see me.
Ooh.
You see who I am behind the facade that I bring when I go to work, when I'm with my friends, whatever that thing that is required of me and I put on a mask, you see beyond that mask. You see the true me. And that's what I believe intimacy is. And everything else surrounding it is just ways of increasing intimacy. You know, that's why I believe that it's not just about romantic relationship. It can be between siblings, friendship, parents, you know, the whole works. Intimacy cuts across the board, even in business. Because, you know, if you don't know your clients, your colleagues well, you're not going to rub well together. So that's what I think intimacy is seeing the true person, the person behind the mask and the facade.
That's such an interesting way to look at it, because like you said, it doesn't have to be romantic or sexual at all to get to that place. Leah, what does intimacy mean to you?
Yeah, it's funny that you said that, because literally 5 minutes ago, someone that I used to date sent me a picture of us when we were dating. And I was like, there's bags under my eyes and my face is puffy and it's just not a cute picture at all. But it was that level of intimacy that we had that was able to make me feel comfortable in my own skin, where I didn't have to worry about what I looked like or what I was doing. You know, there's so much of ourselves that, you're right, I think we shield from the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most people don't know that I'm incredibly silly and clumsy, or maybe most people do know. But I generally only demonstrate that or show that when I feel like I'm in a safe space.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's what intimacy means to me, is the safe space that you create within a relationship.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I think for me, it's definitely less about the physical. And I think when it comes to dating and relationships, that can present a challenge if the person that you're with is looking for that in terms of how they want to receive intimacy. So for me, it's more like, for example, if someone looked at it like if you want to take sex as an example, the act of sex, I know it's a form of intimacy, but that's not something that I would like crave for if I'm looking for intimacy at that moment in time. But where like someone might look into your eyes or the cuddling you have afterwards, for me, those are like really important intimate moments. Like for me, sometimes with intimacy, it's definitely not just, it works in platonic relationships as well. So sometimes I crave intimacy, but it's not from my partner. I just crave intimacy. So I might say, feel like, I feel like I crave intimacy right now. and I go and see my siblings and we'll just cuddle and watch a film.
But I read something the other day on Twitter where someone was saying, like, my partner read my favourite book to me for an hour. Oh. That was a new experience of intimacy. And for me, I was like, not that I want my partner to read to me for an hour. I don't really want that. But that is the sort of level of, that's just like the same scope of intimacy that I desire. Do you get what I mean? Oh. So if I'm chilling with my partner and my legs are over his legs and I'm on my phone, he might look at that as like, I'm disengaged. But to me, that's very intimate because I'm very close to that person.
Mm. Yeah, some, if you're able to kind of just sit in silence with someone, that's such a good sign.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's...
I love it. It's so powerful.
Yeah, and I think that's where we need to communicate what intimacy means to us, because our partners are not mind readers. So if that's some... Because what is intimate to you might not be intimate to another person. And this is sometimes where we get it wrong, is that we forget to communicate what is intimacy. So it's very different for everyone, but we need to learn to communicate. And the problem is that we don't communicate. We then try to love differently. That then leads to resentment and frustration. And that's where I come in. Because you then find the people like, oh, he doesn't love me. She doesn't love me. No, it's not that they don't love you. They just don't know how to love you the way you want to be loved, because you're not telling them how you want to be loved.
Yeah. I do think our, like I say our generation, I mean just young people in general, people in their 20s and 30s and whatever, like, but when I say young person, I mean the broadest way possible. I do think people are getting better at that kind of thing. So I think what I've seen a lot on Twitter that I don't think you would see maybe even 5 years ago is this whole thing about like, what's your love language? Like, what is your love language? Like, how do you like to be appreciated? Yeah. How do you like to be taken care of? What is it you actually want from relationship? And for some people, and we did this recently as well, and shared our love languages. But, you know, for some people, it's like physical gifts. For some people, it's just like acts of kindness or whatever it might be. Yeah. But all of those things are intimacy, for sure. Mm-hmm.
No, definitely. And I must admit that for the younger generations, we're going to call them this time around, it is better because they're more open to finding out for themselves as opposed to saying, let me do what my parents did. So they have the option of actually saying, I'm going to set the path of how I want my relationship to be and how I want to be loved and how I'm going to love and I'm going to be more open. But then if you come to those people like me, 40 plus, in that relationship, in that sphere, we were copying our parents.
So, do you think that speaks to, you know, why you think it's you particularly focus on Black couples? Because, like, you know, the way that you were brought up and the way this idea of, like, just following what your parents did or just following a culture, just following your upbringing... is that part of the reason you focus on Black couples?
Yes, most definitely, because I went through it myself. So I went through that journey of where I was taught that my needs were not as important, that I had to be the one that held the home together. I was the one that had to hold the marriage together. And that's a lot of pressure to put on anyone. You know, you're going into a situation that is new. You don't know what's going to happen. And you're being taught that you need to do all these things. Marriage, I mean, some people will not like it, but I am going to call it, it's a job.
You're learning on the job.
You're learning on the job.
There's no work experience.
Exactly. I mean, our culture is, so it was kind of that thing of, oh my goodness, what is happening here? So that is the reason why I focus on us, because I think that culturally, there is an expectation that we need to behave a certain way. And that we can't, and if you go for what they would term free love and just do as you please and, you know, live with your partner and, you know, all the things that they would say is not Black, doesn't make it wrong.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it wrong. But the thing about it is that we were brought up to think it is wrong. And if you have this feeling that sex is wrong, intimacy is only a one-way traffic, it's going to affect you in your relationship, regardless of whether it's platonic or not, because there's always going to be that feeling that it's the success of the relationship focuses on just one person. And that's not true. It's, I don't say 50-50, I say 100% each. Everyone gives 100% to their relationship. to make it a success. And part of that is being authentic yourself and showing your authenticity to your partner and loving wholly and completely. If you hold back, then they're not loving all of you. They're just loving part of you. And what do you think is going to happen 5 years down the line?
When they see the rest of you.
Exactly more. Because I considered myself quite a very emotionally intelligent person. So after the breakdown of my relationship, I went counseling. And then I went to Vegas on my own, came back, saw a coach. And once I had gone through that journey of healing, I realized that actually, if this can happen to me, and I think I'm, you know, emotionally intelligent, I've got it together, how many other people are like me who are suffering in silence but can't actually articulate the issues that they're facing? Because most of the people in that sphere don't understand the upbringing we've had and how we think differently when it comes to the relationship and how we think differently when it comes to sex and how we associate sex, we associate guilt and shame to sex. And when you have these associations with this, it makes you not want to live your fullest. And so, yeah, so that was why I then said, actually, this is what I'm going to do. And to be honest, I spent a lot of time in quite a lot of sex groups on Facebook as well. So I realized that was my calling. So that was literally, it was my experience that led to it. And, you know, I know people will say, but yeah, you know, how can you do this? But you know what? I've seen so many people suffer in silence. And why suffer in silence? You don't have to. Relationships are not meant to be endured. They're meant to be enjoyed. So when you can get help and when someone can help you, seek the help and get it sorted.
I guess there's a lot of stigma attached to it, isn't there? This idea that your relationship needs outside help, whether that's someone like yourself or whether that's a therapist or, you know, a relationship counsellor. This idea that if you can't figure it out between the two of you, then we must not be able to be together. Is that a stigma that you think you've had to fight doing what you do?
I think that's our community in itself, because we so want to be self-sufficient. We're brought up to be self-sufficient. You've got to solve your problems. Why can't you solve your problems? But the honest truth is, as you said, there's no work experience. Yes, you might learn from one relationship to another, but each person is unique and different in their own ways. And if you don't know how to take on their differences and how to manage them with your own, you're going to have problems. I mean, we all, you know, if you drive, you learn how to drive. If you want to ride a horse, you learn how to ride a horse. So learn to be better in the relationship as well. So, and that's why I always share my story, saying that I went for counseling and I went to see a coach. I would not be where I am today if I didn't. Oh, God knows I wouldn't. So there is no shame. And we need to take away that stigma of thinking that seeking help is a problem. I mean, after all, people have personal trainers. Why not just go to the gym and do it yourself?
I mean, that's so true.
It's kind of about, I mean, even for me, because I definitely, the point that you made about learning from your parents definitely resonates with me, because I feel like their relationship was such a model for me, not necessarily in a good way. Mm-hmm. So there is also this carrying over of airing your dirty laundry and taking your business outside of the home and what that means. I think this ranges from people having problems in their marriage all the way to domestic abuse and that kind of thing. And so how do people get over that hump of really being honest with you about what they want or what they're seeking?
So for me, what I do in my own process is that I have a 30-minute consultation. So you get to know me and I get to know you. And I also believe that we have to have a connection, because if we don't have a connection and if you don't trust me, then you're not going to be able to be truthful with me. So I have a few questions that I ask just to see how open they would be. And if they're not being open, I am honest with them and say, I could easily take their money, but I don't think that's ethical. So what I say is, if you're not ready to actually make this change or to get help or take the actions to make your relationship better, then I'm going to say no. Not because I don't want your money or I don't want you as a client, but I want to make sure that you actually start to get the results that you want. But if you're not fully prepared to take those steps, you're not going to get the results that you want, and then you're going to be more frustrated. So I am very open and honest, because so when I'm open and honest, then they see, oh, okay, she's being honest with me and saying, you know, I'm not going to take your money just for the sake of it. Makes them more relaxed. And I always highlight, nothing on the face of this planet will make me discuss your business outside. If you see me on the street and you don't want to say hello, it's okay with me. I have no problem with it. Because I understand that is embarrassing. It's hard to open up to someone, then let other people know. You know, I've had friends who have come to me as clients and they would never say anything. So even when I ask for a testimonial, I have to block it out, because they know that people will be speculating about why have they spoken to Duchess. You know, so, and I understand that. So I always emphasize confidentiality. We have to have a connection. This is how I work. And give them an opportunity to say yes or no.
It's so good that you have that attitude towards your work, like you take it so seriously, because I'm sure there are people who potentially do just take the money, or who don't appreciate that, you know, some people just because, like, I don't know, like some people I know, it's not open information that they have a therapist. So if they saw the therapist out, they might not want to say hello. And the fact that you, as someone on the other side, get that, I think is really, really noble. Because like because I just imagine seeing your clients out and going to say hello and they ignore you and just being like, no, it's not personal, like don't know what else they got going on in their life. How long have you actually been doing this then?
So I've been doing this full time for about 18 months.
And if you were to give us some advice and some listener advice, like, I appreciate that every relationship is completely different, but, you know, the tips that you could pass on that kind of come up time and time again.
So I truly believe that in a relationship, you need to be your true self from the beginning. Don't fake it. Don't come up with what you think they want you to be. Because at the end of the day, your true self is going to leak out and they're going to look at you and wonder, who are you? Another thing is learn to communicate. And when I say communicate, it's not just about talking. It's about knowing the right time to speak to your partner, knowing the right tone to use, and the words. Because the reason why I say so is, if you have a partner who likes sports, so I'm being stereotypical here, but you know, if a man likes sports, for instance, you don't want to talk to him when Arsenal's playing. He's not going to listen. He's going to be irritated. And then if you're trying to have a conversation and he's then not listening, you're going to be irritated as well. And then the next thing, there's an argument. Why? It could just wait. You want to have a conversation. Use a softer tone. It's not because you want to, I don't know, manipulate them, but it's the fact that human beings respond to softness. You don't have to shout to make your point. And the words that you use, choose your words nicely. You know, we all like to feel special when we're spoken to. If you want them to make you feel special and listen, you can make them feel special when you're actually communicating. And another thing I would say is make time for each other. You know, be conscious in having those special moments, you know, dates. And I know it sounds cliche, you know, having date nights, but we are all busy people. We all work. So you have to make a conscious effort. It's not a case of, yes, you can be spontaneous, but unfortunately, sometimes life doesn't allow you to be spontaneous. And just because spontaneity doesn't happen, doesn't mean that you can't actually do something in your relationship. So allocate time for dates. Allocate times when you watch a movie. You know, take a car ride together. Laugh. You know, we sometimes forget to laugh and play. Everything isn't
the
always
simple things.
It's, you know, life is serious enough as it is. So relationship is serious. You get into a relationship, you're probably then going to have a mortgage and all the stuff that comes with it. But you've got to remember to laugh, remember to play, remember to hug. And please remember to kiss. Most importantly, top tip.
Kiss. Hey.
I'm not talking peck on the cheek. Oh, mwah. No. I'm talking
No, honey.
Tongue.
Smooch.
Lip.
Yeah.
Forever exchanging
yes.
kisses.
Bite that lip.
Don't forget it.
Do what you gotta do.
Because you'd be surprised how many people stop doing the passionate kissing. It then becomes a peck. And it's like you underestimate the
childish.
Power. affectionate kiss.
Well, and we have an expert kisser on the podcast. Shan is kisser connoisseur.
Oh, yes, that is me. So if any of your clients, need, you know, training or help in this department, feel free to pass them over to me and I can help them on their journey.
I think mine would probably be more men because they just think sometimes that it's like a water fight, but you know, to one side.
You were talking about communication just then, and I agree with you that it's really important. Even going back to the date, so with me and my boyfriend, we have this thing where every other month someone plans like a surprise date. So we'll have dates throughout the month and we'll see each other throughout it. But like, we take it in turns. So it'll be like, for example, he said to me, for his month's November, so he'll be like, okay, from the 1st to the 6th, book it off of work. And I'll be like, oh, why? And he'll be like, oh, can't tell you. But it just keeps the excitement and like the fire like ignited. So I think that's a really interesting point that you just said. But on that note of communication and understanding like what you want and stuff, what advice do you have for people to figure out their non-negotiables?
Oh, non-negotiables, my favorite word. So the way I see it is that I would say non-negotiables for starters are things that they are your core values. That's what I call non-negotiables. They're the things that are your core values. It's not about superficial things, you know. So it's a case of, I say, list out 10 things that are your values, 10 things that are important to you, very important to you. List them out. And then within the 10, pick your top three. The top three that you know that if for any reason it's breached, that is going to hurt you almost like a physical hurt. So, you know, so find out what is that thing that's important and always, always, always communicate it to the other person so that they know. Because sometimes what we do is we keep it to ourselves and expect them to know. No one's a mind reader. So, and it also gives them opportunity to say, okay, you know what? For instance, if honesty is your thing and you're with someone who believes in white lies or believes in not telling you the full truth because they think that you're going to have the handle, that's a breach. So let them know that it's very important to me. So they can make a decision, oh, maybe I shouldn't be with this lady or this man. And you've been honest so that when they start to breach it and you're like, sorry, this is not going to work for me because you are actually making me very uncomfortable and very unloved and very unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a surprise. So I would always say start with 10 and break it down to 3.
Do you feel like there is a way to build intimacy after one of those non-negotiables has been broken? Like, how do you go about regaining intimacy after trust has been lost in some way, shape, or form?
If say, for instance, if trust, and I know it's going to be weird when I say this standard because people are like, oh, surely it must be a non-negotiable. Trust, if trust is broken, it's not a core value for everyone. Let's be honest. Excuse me. It's not a core value for everyone. Everyone assumes that trust is a given. And I agree, it's a given. So if it's a core value to you and it's been broken, you have to self-examine and in effect, almost self-coach to see if you can get over it. Because what you don't want to do is, because that person has breached your trust and you're now feeling very insecure, unsafe in the relationship, that every time they do something that triggers that, you're then attacking them. Your relationship can't survive. So this is the time that you have to make up your mind. Can I move on from this? If you can, then do so and truly move on. It's not a case of bringing it up every time. If you think it's going to take you a while, be honest and say, it's going to take me a while, but I am going to get over it. And if after a while, and I think you should actually specify time, because if you say a while, that could be
5 years.
Exactly. You know, so I think you should also specify. And if you can't by that time, be honest and then do what you need to do in the relationship. So I'm not saying that you can't overcome someone breaching your core values, but you need to let them know, because if they continue to do it, then they don't have respect for you. I'm sorry, but there's no respect for you. There's no love for you. There's no care for you. So why would you want to be in that situation?
It sounds so deep, but as you said, if your core values are essentially how you are as a person and what makes you, and someone's breaching that in a relationship, it's almost like, as you said, they don't respect you because they're like, do you know what? I've done that thing and got away with it. Like, she's still here. So why am I going to change? Because I'm getting away with it. That's what they're thinking. That's what anyone would think. You're thinking, oh, she told me to change, but she ain't leaving. So...
And that's the truth. And I know people say, yeah, but you need to forgive. Yes, you need to forgive, but you don't let people take the piss.
Yeah.
You got to set boundaries.
Amen.
In relationships, you've got to set boundaries. You can't let people take the piss. Because if they take the piss, the person that's ultimately going to suffer is you.
True.
It's you, because you're the one that's going to be in bed thinking over and, oh my God, how could they do this to me? Don't they? And you're just going to be having this conversation with yourself. Not sleeping, being stressed, having wrinkles, and I don't like wrinkles. You know, just the whole distress of it, you know. So it's like, well, no. Set boundaries. Tell them off. And if it's not working for you, you know what? Relationship is not do or die. As much as I love relationships and I believe in the beauty of relationships and the connection it brings and all the other benefits it brings, you need to be happy. And happiness has to be defined by you. You need to love yourself first. I mean, RuPaul says, if you don't love yourself, how can you love anyone else? That's what he says.
Amen. So, let the church choir sing. No, I love RuPaul. Big Drag Race fan.
I mean, I'm a massive Drag Race fan. It's ridiculous. So yeah, but you know, so that, and that's a true, it's a true message. You've got to have self-love. And within that relationship, you can't let another person take the piss with your emotions, with your feelings. Mm. No. Not in any possible manner. It's not, no. So actually, I'm even getting vexed just thinking about it.
Okay, the passion taken over.
So, yeah.
This is the Dope Black Women Podcast.
Do you guys know what your non-negotiables are? I'm trying to think. I'm like, as Duchess was talking, I was thinking of my top 10 and I was trying to think what are my top three within that 10, if I could even identify what they are.
What are my top three? Empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy is super important to me. I just think, you know, someone who's able to... Someone who has high social intelligence, basically, is super important. Like, you know, if we have an argument about something, I want you to not just say sorry. I want you to actually understand why I'm upset and why that has upset me and, like, how you would feel if that happened to you. Like, those things need to happen. Like, otherwise, I won't actually feel closure or get over it. Similarly, you need empathy because... and I've said this before in different episodes because it's something I feel really passionate about. You know, if you are someone that has a mental health condition, your partner needs empathy. You need a partner who can understand you and support you. If you have someone who's just going to be like, rah, that's mad. Well, you know, feel anxiety? Better. Like, smile, man. Be positive. Hashtag be kind. Like, do you know what I mean? That's not gonna last very long. So, yeah, I would say empathy is one of my 10. I'll get back to you on the other 9. Sham, what about you?
I'll definitely say the top one is stability. And that's in terms of me feeling it and also the person offering it. I think that comes from just daddy issues, to be honest, where I was talking to my therapist about it the other day, and I think that's where it comes from. But stability is a core thing. And as soon as I don't feel that in any relationship, whether it's platonic or romantic, I'm out of there.
I'm exactly like you. Stability is very important to me. It is very important.
It's top. And then I'd also say someone who has a strong moral compass. I'm yet to decide whether or not it's exclusive to religion or if I'm open to it being outside of that. But I feel like someone who doesn't live by any morals is quite a scary person.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you have to hold yourself account to something or someone.
Yeah.
And even if your moral compass is led by your parents and what they've taught you, that's good enough. That's a starting point. But I think someone who's just taking life on the limb and they just make things that they go along with what's right and wrong, that's a bit nuts. Because like life is a journey, isn't it? So I feel like you have to learn from somebody. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when when you become a mum and it's your first time, you know what it's like to be a mum. So you go to the mother and baby classes before your child is born. Mm. You might go to one or two and think they're shit, but you're still going to go to the first one because you feel like it's important because it's something that's new to you. And then the third one I'd go to would be agreeing with what Liv's, not agreeing because I feel like everyone's opinions are going to be personal to them, but going back to what Liv said about mental health and understanding around that. Mm-hmm. For me, it's really important that someone, so because I have like anxiety and things like that, I think it's really important that the person I'm with has an understanding around that. But I think even if I didn't have it, I'd still find it equally as important because it's about their attitudes towards society. So I wouldn't feel comfortable being with someone and they see someone on the street who's displaying a mental illness and they're like, that person's crazy. Like, that would really, I would lock it off then. I don't care where we're going. It could be Novikov. I'm going home. That's where I'm going. Because that sort of attitude is not someone that I would want to be around. And the same applies to my friends again. So I think for me, when it comes to non-negotiables, it definitely overlaps in what I desire in a friendship too. Mm-hmm. As opposed to it being like just romantic.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And, you know, I think friendships as well, they should be non-negotiable because, you know, if we're not aligned, we can't hang. It's just as simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you're just an acquaintance. But if you're my friend, we have to have some values that align. We can have differences, but our fundamentals should be aligned because then we're part of the friendship.
Mm. It's interesting you mentioned friendship because I think not enough people talk about the values within your friendship. Like, people talk about it, you know, in terms of your relationship with your partner, because that is so much more serious and there's so much more to lose, I guess, which I get. But, like, you know, as you said, you should also apply your non-negotiables to your friendships because they're just as important. I think a lot of people are like, oh, but, you know, we've known each other for years. Like, you know, we grew up together. Like, you know, we went to school together. Like, you come up with excuses. And sometimes, and this has happened to me before, for sure, I step back and I'm like, wait, but would I let Josh is my boyfriend, would I let Josh get away with this behavior that person X is doing? Mm. Do you know what I mean? And you realize, like, no. So why am I? And so, because you don't kind of incorporate your non-negotiables to your friendships, you're kind of led to believe like, oh no, that's the thing you do for your romantic relationships only.
And I think the thing is, I think for me personally, I feel like when it comes to friendships, it's easier to have those non-negotiables because I feel like with friendships, you have levels. With your partner, they're just your partner, that's it.
Yeah.
With your friendship, you have your best friend, you have close friends, stroke good friends, and then you have acquaintances, and then you have people that you don't give a shit about. And so someone might not meet your top three non-negotiables, so they probably won't be in the running to be your best friend, but they might meet your top seven, and therefore they're your acquaintance or they're your close friend. Do you get what I mean? So I feel like it's a lot easier for like friendships to allow certain things to run. But I think what you just said just then, Livs, about putting it to someone, like, would I expect, or would I allow this from this person who's significant in your life? I think that's a really important thing to have some sort of measurement on. And as I think it's also equally important to ask yourself, like, would I do this to that person? Or what did that person think doing X would make me feel like? Because sometimes when people do things, if they're oblivious to how it would make you feel, I feel like they can get applied to it and they can, like, have learning and understanding to be able to not do it again. But if someone's out like doing something they know will upset you, then that's problematic. But, Leanne, we didn't get on to you. What was your top three negotiables?
Gosh, I don't know. I think honesty is definitely, or transparency, whichever word you want to use, is super important to me because I think I am quite I don't necessarily operate in extremes, in moderation anyway. And so my response, regardless of how honest or dishonest you are, could go either way. And so I think giving me the opportunity to respond authentically is really important, good, bad, or ugly.
Yeah.
So I would say that's probably my top one.
No, that definitely makes sense. And even coming back to the friends thing, Sean, when you were talking about the friends, and, you know, I told my friends, well, my ride or die friends, I told them, I said, my birthday is very important to me. I don't care what you do about anything else, but my birthday is way important. Don't mess with my birthday. Don't forget. If you want me to remind you, I will remind you, because on my birthday, it's all about me. And they know that. So now they know. they can, you know, they can take the piss with anything else. But two things, my birthday and if we've gone out late at night, let me know you got home. Those are my two.
You that's very cute. Know.
So, Fezzeline, I said, no. And but see, the thing is, as I said, since I've gone through my journey, I've learned how to be open and say the things that make me tick so I can be a better friend.
Mm-hmm.
And so they understand me, and now they're able to say the things that are that make them tick. Because I'm just like, if we're going to be very good friends, we spend a lot of time together, and I'm going to be sharing myself with you, I expect the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If not, you are an acquaintance. That means I can not talk to you for 2 years. See you on Facebook. Okay?
you used to write not even happy birthday, just HB. That's what you know. Exactly. Like, we are not homies.
Exactly. So, and you know, that's all part of intimacy. It's all part of building that intimacy in the relationship. Because if you have that, it also allows you to be free to say to your friend, look, what you said the other day upset me. You know, because you can't say that. What's the point?
Listen. I have had to get rid of two friends recently because of that same reason. I'm telling them what's wrong with me, what an issue that I have that they've done towards me. And they're gaslighting me and telling me that I can't feel this way. Do you know how crazy that is? This is what I'm saying. You can, and the thing is, the worst thing is, with one of them, I actually said, I know you didn't mean to think we feel this way. I know you. Do you get what I mean? I know you so well that I know there's no way in hell you want me to feel in the way that you did. However, you did. So this is a learning point. And when I said it wasn't even a discussion. I just sent a nice little message, signed it off with X's, little emojis, you know? It was just more like for them to reflect on rather than to be a dialogue and an argument. And she reflected on it and I got these big paragraphs back and I was thinking, you completely missed what I've said. You completely disacknowledged my feelings. And on that basis alone, that one account, I just had to burn her bridge. And like my mom and like people that now I'm close with her are like, you're not friends with her yet. And I'm like, you're missing the point. They done something that upset me and they tried to gaslight my experience. I don't want that sort of person around me. So everything else is now invalid because someone that does that about you doesn't care about you on any level.
Sorry.
No, I was just going to ask if you guys feel like it's harder to get rid of or let go of friendships than it is intimate relationships. Like, producer Leanne is like, no, get rid of
100%. 100%.
You know what? I feel like it is, you know.
I feel like it's harder for me, to be honest, because of what Liv said, actually, because this person has been a part of your life for such a long time and you grow with them and you love them through their mistakes. And that's kind of part of what I view as friendship as well. So it's like,
no, 100%. At
what time do you find the line between loving someone through their mistakes and then being like, as Duchess said, actually you're taking the piss now.
You know what? I'm the exact same with you in terms of that. But I think for me, with this situation where like I just said, forget this, it's like you got to look at so many factors. So first of all, this person was now the shock to my peace. And my peace always comes first. If you're going to disrupt my peace and you're not God, then you can just F off. That's first and foremost. Secondly, you got to look at what value this person adds to your life. You have different types of friends. So this particular friend, from the outside looking in, some might say he's my best friend or my close friend. Now, they was my close friend. I was with them all the time. But let's talk about values. What do you add to my life? Now, you add that you're fun, you're great to be around. But do you know what? All my other friends bring that too. So what else do you add? Nothing else. So therefore, you're easy to get rid of. Do you understand what I mean? Like, sometimes friendships is like, if you think of a seesaw, you're both on the seesaw, up and down, you're having fun, but someone's outweighing the other person. Do you get it? And that's when it's easier to look for friends. What is the balance in this friendship? Are you getting more from me than I'm getting from you? And it doesn't have to be like financial or anything like that, but how much am I giving out and compared to how much am I getting back? Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes I think we focus so much on how long we've known the person, but let's actually talk about the value of that friendship. They might have been your best friend for 15 years, but how much value do they now give you in your current life?
And to be honest, you have to think about it. The fact is that we change. As we grow, we change. So we have to reevaluate what are they bringing to the table. I mean, for me, to be fair, I'm actually probably the opposite. I can give up my friend easily, but the man might give you more leeway. But I realize that that's because I can mentally demote my friend. They don't even have to know. I've demoted you. You are no longer in the Duchess's court, so to speak. You know?
They're not that person you're going to call up in the middle of the night anymore, exactly. And that's fine.
You're, you know, you're not that person. You're not that we can say hello, you know, we can even go clubbing together, not a problem. When it comes to the things that are deep and meaningful, if I'm having a project that I want to do and I want to bounce off ideas, trust me, you're not going to know about it to the day I blow up. So I'm not, I might not tell you, but I've, you know, you've gone down, because we always have to evaluate everything that we're doing. If not, we get stuck or people hold us back. Because think about it. Every one of us, we're all progressing in whatever it is that we're doing. Then you have a friend, or if you want to start something new, I know people who would have said to me and said, Duchess, relationship, sex, intimacy coach, where, how? But she was a business analyst the other day. But they don't know what I've done to get to where I am unless they hear my story. But they'll be making judgments. If I keep telling them the things that I want to do, they're just going to be giving me negative vibes. I ain't got time for that.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, like, just an example of that kind of thing, that also you don't need to, just remembering that you have different boundaries and expectations of people as well. You have different expectations of your different relationships. So say, for example, the scenario is, you know, me having an anxiety attack or feeling really anxious about something or needing support from my partner or from my close inner circle, I might expect like support. I might expect you to like check in on me if I need it. I might expect you to just like speak to me a certain way. If you're like outside, like I'm not expecting those things, but you can still be kind of respectful. You can still like show some kind of understanding. So still holding those same morals and values to people, but you don't have the same expectations of them because they're not your like the first three people that you would call if you're in an emergency. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just understanding that your expectations of different friends can be all right as well.
No, I tell you that, no, that is very true, and that's why there are levels in friendships. You know, there's as you said, as Sean said before, you know, your boyfriend's your boyfriend, your husband's your husband, but your friends, they all got different levels, and they can move in between it at any given time for any different situation. You know, I know the friend to call if I want to go and party hard. I know the friend to call when I want to talk business. You know, I have different friends who do different things for me. Doesn't mean that they're any more a friend or less of a friend. It's just that what the intimacy we share is for a particular thing, as opposed to a friend who covers all aspects of it. So who are my true ride or die?
Just shifting, because we've talked about relationships and then we've talked about platonic friendships. I mean, I'm in the process of I'm single. And I'm in the process of kind of regaining my sense of self, I would say. That's kind of been my journey this year.
Yeah.
Is that something that you deal with as well in your job as an intimacy coach, like dealing with individuals and how they learn to be intimate with themselves or find their safe space within themselves?
I do. And the reason, it's not my core, but I do it because, as I said, I'm divorced. I don't know if I said that, but I'm divorced. So I had to go through that journey in order to heal and to learn who I am and basically find the Duchess, as I like to call it. And so I do help people do that as well, because it is not easy, because there's some tough questions you have to ask yourself, and you really have to dig deep to get the truth and to accept that these are the things that you do, you shouldn't do, you need to change. So I do help with that as well, because the self discovery journey, it's, you know, there's some things you just don't want to face and you want to block them out. And you need someone to like say, no, we've got to tackle this. We need to talk about it. You need to understand why. And, you know, what's going to happen if you stop doing this, especially when it's self sabotage. Why are you doing this? You know, because we all have that in various aspects of our lives. So in the relationship sphere, I do that. And even people who are in relationships still go through self-discovery as well, because things have changed or they want things to change. And self-discovery and self-revelation is very important, because if you don't know who you are, how are you going to tell someone else who you are?
True. Very true. Do you have any advice for people that are on that journey, i.e. myself?
What I would say, not to you directly, but what I would say is, don't feel that anything that you consider negative is a bad reflection of you. Don't associate guilt, don't associate shame with it. Deal with it. If you need to change it, change it. But before you change it, ask yourself why you're changing it. Understand why you're changing it, and then make the change. Because if you don't understand why you're changing it and just change it for the sake of it, you can fall back into that thing, whatever that thing is. Be honest with yourself, because no one else, it's between you and yourself. So you might as well be as honest, even no matter how painful it is. If it's something you've done that brings you shame, brings you guilt, forgive yourself. You need to forgive yourself for whatever that thing you feel is stopping you from moving on. Because if you don't forgive yourself, you're just going to live in that cycle. So be honest, don't blame yourself, and forgive yourself so you can move on and heal. Gosh, I sound like a guru there.
You sound like a duchess.
Exactly. You sound amazing.
Thank you. Just quickly, going back to, we're kind of going backwards here, but I really wanted to ask you this question. When talking about intimacy and non-sexual ways of approaching that, what advice do you have for non-sexual ways?
So the reason why I kind of focus on non-sexual is that what happens is that men especially equate sex with intimacy. And it's not their fault. It's kind of the way they're wired. So they show love through sex, unless you educate them or they've educated themselves. But for us women, we enjoy sex. We love sex. We adore sex. But at the same time, we love the softer side of it. The things that don't put pressure on us if we don't want to have sex. That's how we get in the mood. That's how we feel loved. And we need to understand what that is as women, so we can tell our men. And men need to understand that, respect it, and actually proactively do it. And that's why I say, that's why, I mean, bizarrely enough, that is even why I created a product around that. Because I realized that people are so focused on sex or nothing. If we, you know, oh, can I have a kiss? It must follow on with sex. No, you can just kiss. Why must you have sex after?
For an hour.
You know, it doesn't matter. You know, the truth of the matter that you can be turned on just doesn't mean you have to follow through. You know, have a hug doesn't mean it means something else. So is these, the thing is that is the freedom and the opportunity to be able to be physically intimate without sex, without the expectation of sex. So if we're hugging, doesn't mean that I'm caressing your face, rubbing your chest, doesn't mean that I want to have sex with you. Yes, it would be lovely with you, but doesn't mean that. And you shouldn't be upset if it doesn't end there, because I'm trying to connect with you. And connection doesn't have to mean penetration. Doesn't. So that's why I say you need to focus on the non-sexual bit. The, you know, and intimacy can be going to McDonald's, going to your man's favorite place where he likes to hang out. If he wants you there, you know, if he doesn't, then, you know, stay away. But, you know, just...
No, wait, no.
But, you know, it's just, you know, making the effort to share activities, shared pleasures. You know, Netflix and chill should be Netflix and chill. Shouldn't be Netflix chill, which means something else. It should literally just be chilling. Have a glass of wine. Listen to music together. You know, to each other. Go to the park. I mean, some people say, well, that's not what we do. But, you know, we can do that. Go to the park. Hold hands. You know, we don't always have to jump in the car. We can just hang out. You know, just literally hanging out.
Your card that you were talking about. Yes. What is that?
Oh, okay. The intimacy card. So it's a deck of 52 cards. So one for each week that has words and actions that you can use to demonstrate your love. And so basically, so for example, you have dares and you have just conversation starters. So you have, I have a quick one card that says, how far are you willing to go to improve your intimacy? Would you consider experimenting? So then the small print is brainstorm some ideas and agree on something to try. Then another one is share your sexual insecurities with your partner. Share a fantasy you're too scared to try. Promise to listen to each other without judgment. So I have another dare, which is ask your partner what part of their body they're most insecure about. Show them how beautiful it is without using words.
Aww. Oh, I like that. That's lovely.
You know,
these cards,
I googled it, you know, whilst I was on the phone, I started googling.
The cards, you can get them at www.theintimacycards.com. So yeah, so I created them because I realized that, you know, we don't have conversations, we don't really, you know, they don't come up. The ways to show intimacy and show love through words and actions don't come naturally unless you really, really think about it and say, today, I'm going to do this. So I thought, actually, you know, they have prompts for different things. Why not have for creating, improving intimacy? So that's why I created it. So that was the birth of the intimacy cards. Hmm. So I have I have what I call the intimacy series. It's all about the intimacy. That is who I am. It's what I give, is what I teach.
Yeah, do you know what is funny? When you go in public, say you're going to a restaurant and you look at a couple and you're like, they're not happy because they're just sitting on their phone and they're not actually talking to each other. And when I see that, I just think they must have great sex. Do you know what I mean? Because like, why else are you staying, girl?
Keeping them together.
Yeah, because like you've got what you might consider quote unquote intimacy, but it's not actually, because when you see them out, you know, you can tell there's couples that aren't friends. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. And you're like, what's the point? If they, you know, the thing about it, what I've noticed is the people that you see outside who have, you seem like, oh my God, they're so great together. Look, they're like best friends. Their sex life ain't great. Translate into the bedroom.
There's no oop.
Or maybe it's just not as good as it could be.
Yeah, exactly. It's not, it's good. So they're doing it, but it's not great. There's no passion because the passion has left because they're just good friends. You know, they're just friends. But on a serious note, you do see couples and you look at them and you're like, you guys are just kind of coexisting. And I don't understand that. Why take your phone? Anyway, I suppose everyone's different. I'm like, if you're going to be on your phone, then we don't need to be here. I can eat by myself.
Oh, I can pick my own meal.
Exactly. You know, I can,
sure, I'm the snack.
I can go to a restaurant by myself, to be fair. But, you know, it's like, what's the point? Then you might as well not be out. And that's the reason, because that is an opportunity for them to build intimacy by putting their phone down and having a conversation. And as I mentioned before, and I was saying, that I created a product. I created what I call the intimacy cards, to prompt those kind of conversations. So you can have the conversation, because people don't know how to talk anymore. I'm not going to lie. Some people don't know how to have a conversation. It's either they're talking about work, sports, kids, if they got it, bills, news, but they don't know how to communicate with each other. What's going on with you? Are you okay? What's happening with your life? That thing you said you wanted to do, are you still going to do it? Especially when you don't live together. Those little things, you know, telling your partner why you love them, why you still love them, why you still fancy them. Mm. They're not having those communications anymore. You know, just saying, girl, you fine. It's not enough. I know. I know. I already
Girl, you fine.
You know, that's not what I want. I want more than that. I want to know why. You know? And those are the things that we are missing. And those are the things that build intimacy. And then by going out and still having those conversations just makes it even more intimate. Do you know that you can just sit down and have a conversation, laugh. Oh my God, laughing is just amazing. Laughing together. The fact that you can see something and both of you be like, oh my God. And you have the security to laugh. It's just like, you know, me and my man can see someone and be like, oh my God, look at that lady. Oh my God, she's got no girdle on or something ridiculous like that, and we can laugh together without him being afraid to check her out, because you think I'm going to get insecure and have a fight and say, why are you checking her out? I ain't got time for that.
We can check her out together. You don't know about me.
Exactly. And those
that
are
is me things. You know that exactly. Is me.
And those are the things that build the intimacy, because you can have these conversations, be safe, be secure, have a laugh, and just have fun. Relationship is about fun too. It's not all about just the serious stuff. So yeah, so we can't neglect those non-sexual activities that bring us closer together, because those are the things that help us to move into greater sex. I mean, if you can't tell your man that, oh, you know what, today I just felt like I would want to punch someone, or today I'm just, can you just give me 20 minutes to be on my own because I need a bit of space because I'm just not feeling great, and he respects that, how are you going to tell him that you want a certain sexual position? How's that going to work?
Yeah.
It's not going to happen, because you need to feel comfortable, and your partner also needs to feel comfortable that when you say you need space, doesn't mean that you're rejecting them. Because that once you've had your 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you're going to come look for them and say, you know, I'm feeling better, thank you for giving me this space. And we should remember to say, thank you for giving me the space, I'm feeling better, and these are one of the reasons why you are my number one person.
I think that bottom up is really important, because it's so easy to take those things personally when you don't know where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. And it's not that the other person has an obligation to tell you in that moment.
Yeah.
So as you said, it's about having that kind of safety net to know that the foundation that you have is so solid that it probably doesn't have anything to do with you.
Mm. Exactly. Well, that's definitely something I'm going to take away, because I've always wanted to ask for space. I never actually say thanks, so I feel attacked.
I suppose it's just managing each other's expectation. Like I remember I had a client who came to me about sex, and they were like, you know, sometimes they're not in the mood, but when they say no to their husband, he feels rejected. I'm like, if you tell your husband you're not in the mood, tell him when you are going to be in the mood. Oh, but I don't know when that's going to be. Make one up and keep to it. Because that's the reason why they're going to always trust that if you say you're not in the mood, you're truly not in the mood, is not because you're rejecting them, because you don't want them. So make it up to them. But if you just say, I'm not in the mood, and never bring it up again, or never say anything about, oh, you know what, babe, I'm not in the mood tonight, but in the morning, can we do, you know, something. So they have something to look forward to, and they know that you considered their feelings. But if you just say, I'm not in the mood, turn your back and then go to sleep, that's not a good place to be. Definitely not a good place to be. So it's just managing people's feelings, to know that sometimes people can make it about themselves, but when they get that trust and that intimacy with you and know, then they're able to relax and just say, it's one of those. I actually had a boyfriend who said to me, oh my god, you're having PMT. I'm like, well, I don't have PMT. Like, no, you do. And he said to highlight how I get cranky, and I was like, oh. So once I started getting very touchy about a few things, he would say, it's that time of the month. And I'll kind of look at my calendar, like, oh yeah, it is. So he recognized that. So he knew how to give me a bit of an allowance to my cranky self. You know, and that's intimacy.
I think there's so many good points here that we're going to take away. Just really appreciate, you know, all the advice and everything you've passed on. As part of this episode, like, hopefully our listeners will take something away. I know that we will. So yeah, thank you so much. So where can we find you online, and where can we find out about your work?
Okay, so you can find me, I've got a website, www.duchesssecrets.com, and you can find me on Facebook, Duchess Iphe, Iphie, or my business page, which is Duchess Secrets. On Instagram, it's Duchess_Iphe. Email is info@duchesssecrets.com.
So guys, thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get them from. On Twitter and Facebook, we're Dope Black Woman. And on Instagram, we are Dope Black Woman 1. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, stay blessed and unapologetically black.
All the way black. Black be black.
Blacktastic.
Hey! it's kind of basically the idea is that, okay, your word is blacktastic.